This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
The animal doctor is here. 786-456-4837 is the telephone number. We will get to your calls. Also have sprinkled in some limited fake Sean Connerys who are still on hold. So we're going to have to do those as well because we can't separate the calls. But before we go any further, we need to go out first to Christine Lisi.
And finally, in 2009, Nigerian police arrested a goat on a suspicion of attempted robbery.
What?
That's all I have.
Really?
Okay.
Arrested. Was Michael Jordan okay?
I thought you were going to go Brady there.
Always MJ there.
Yes, always MJ. Okay. Before we get to your calls, Roy, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Ron, 100 pilot whales were beached in Sri Lanka. How exactly does that happen, and what is the proper way for humans to help these whales get back into the sea?
Well, you know, beachings are not a terribly uncommon thing, and unfortunately, most of the time, they're related to an illness, a parasite, a sickness. It's unfortunate that a lot of the whales, even when they return to sea, end up beaching themselves again because of whatever illness brought them there in the first place. However, it can save a lot of these animals. If you see a marine mammal stranded, you need to call your local wildlife authority, whether it be the marine mammal patrol, whether it be your fish and wildlife department. They are the ones that are suited to go out there. I mean, people can try to mean well and try to go out there and bring those animals back out to sea, and you could really hurt yourself and you could really hurt the animal if you don't know what you're doing. Again, having said that, you may be able to save some of them. Some of them, of course, have been saved over years, but a lot of times we've unfortunately found that many of the ones that beached, they beached themselves again because of whatever illness, whatever problem brought them there in the first place. So it's an uphill battle, to say the least.
Chris, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Ron, I'm wondering how often animals in the same exhibit have altercations, and if you have like a most memorable one in your career.
Oh, that happens all the time. I mean, it's like, you know, how many times do families in the same house have altercations? Whatever comes up, it depends whether it's a fight over food, it's a fight over space, it's a fight over a mate. That happens all the time. The most significant ones I remember are lions. When the female lionesses are in heat, the brothers, the two males, who normally get along with each other fine, turn into absolute arch enemies. And they get into these battles that are, they'll make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. The roars, the screaming, the lunges with the claws. It looks like a fight to the death. Fortunately, it's usually just some superficial scratches and some egos being destroyed. But it is very scary to look at.
It's never a fight to the death?
No, we've never had that happen. Generally speaking, in the wild, you know, here at the zoo, we're lucky. We have very large exhibits. So an animal that knows he's about to lose can run away. Sometimes if you have animals in too much of an enclosed space, that could lead to a fatal outcome. Because in the wild, generally speaking, those battles are not to the death. That is a very rare occurrence. Animals know when they're going to lose, and they run away. But in captivity, you have to be able to give them a space to run to. If not, it can result tragically.
Will the zoo staff intervene at all during these things, or you just let it play out how it plays out?
Are you crazy? What can you do?
I'm not saying like going out there by yourselves or just doing something.
All right, guys, let Ron answer.
Dan, he makes a good point. There are times, you know, we'll have it. For instance, I'll tell you, when we put our rhinos together for breeding, foreplay in rhinos is very physical, very intense. They'll actually draw blood on each other, but it's actually part of foreplay.
Okay? Amen.
So we have to be very not vigilant in attention. Observing them to be able to determine, is this foreplay or is it that they hate each other's guts? I have personally been between two rhinos, a male and female, where the female was just just killing them, and she was knocking them all over the place. He was bleeding. And we had to come to the conclusion, listen, this is not foreplay any longer because there's no way he's going to be able to do anything the way she's beating him up. So we had to separate them. And we went in there with a pickup truck. I'm in the bed of the pickup with a fire extinguisher. And we shot a fire extinguisher between them to separate them.
Wow.
You guys are laughing, but this is serious.
No,
really,
I'm marveling.
Great. It's uncrazy.
We actually had a truck that was designated as the separator truck that was banged up. It looked as if it had rolled down a mountainside because it had been banged up by the rhino so much. And we go in there, we shoot the fire extinguisher, and we separate them.
That's great. Greg, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Ron, this came up in the local hour. We were wondering whether ants had teeth, and it got me to thinking, is it possible to do surgery on the tiniest little animal. What is the smallest animal that can endure a medical procedure?
Gosh, I wish I had the answer to that, Greg. I don't know. I mean, I know that they have done surgery on something as small as a hummingbird, which is pretty tiny, but it's a very risky procedure, as you can imagine. And generally speaking, the riskiest part of any of those procedures is the anesthesia itself. Just getting the anesthesia right is one of the biggest challenges with a lot of these animals. So, again, I've known they've done surgery on something as small as a hummingbird, and that's pretty small, so it can be done.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Do ants have teeth? Ron, last week you were away because you were involved in a number of procedures, surgical procedures at the zoo. Do you have a story involving an animal waking during the procedure in a way that caused you problems? Or do you have a memorable surgery story?
Well, I do have a memorable story, and it was literally 2 weeks after I started working over 40 years ago at the old Crandon Park Zoo on Key Biscayne. We had to immobilize a chimpanzee because he had cut his arm, and the arm had to be stitched up. So those days, we just had cages. It was an awful situation. So they darted the chimp, and then once he went down, he was immobilized, we brought him out and laid him on the grass next to the cage. And we're right alongside a canal there where the zoo is. And the veterinarian gets on his knees between the chimp. I'm holding one arm. Another a veteran is holding the other arm. This is my second week on the job. This chimp is out cold, okay? And the veterinarian is leaning over and starts sewing up this laceration on his arm. And then all of a sudden, without any warning, the chimp sits up, puts his face 5 inches in front of the veterinarian who's leaning over, sewing his arm, and just goes, wow, wow, and screams at the top of his lungs. I was so scared I froze. The other guy on the other arm jumped into the canal. Okay. And then all of a sudden, I'm not exaggerating, I'm not making this up, but all of a sudden, his eyes rolled back in his head and he fell back down on his back. And I'm shaking. I'm looking at the vet. I go, what happened? Is he going to wake up again? And he goes, no, you know, the drug that they used back then is actually a drug that people you hear now is used for date rape all the time, is ketamine. He says that drug often causes these animals to have hallucinations in the middle of anesthesia. Well, they will react that way, but they're not awake. They don't know what they're doing, and nothing can happen. You just let them fall back asleep. I go, I wish you had told me that ahead of time. But it's now different because now they use a cocktail of drugs. They don't use straight ketamine anymore. And that cocktail helps to offset these unexpected awakenings, so to speak. But it was scary, man. It was really scary.
We've been doing this about 10 years with Ron McGill, and every damn week we learn something new. Adam B., you are on ESPN Radio. Go ahead, Adam B.
Womack.
That's a very limited
that,
Sean
though.
Connery. Dex, you're on with Ron McGill. Go ahead, Dex.
Hey, Ron, I'm just wondering if there was a species or subspecies of animal across the world that decided, hey, we're done with the humans, we're taking them out, what stands the best chance of doing that?
If they had the mental capacity to do so, it would be the mosquito. It would be the mosquito that would, you know, consciously seek out humans to spread fatal diseases from dengue to malaria to Ebola, whatever it is. Mosquitoes are the greatest vector and the greatest killers of human beings historically. And if they had a mindset to where they could coordinate an attack, oh, we'd be in trouble.
Jason, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, thanks, Dan, for taking my call. Just want to let you guys know that when you open the club on Friday, I'm up in Alaska. It's only 7:45 in the morning, and the sun's not out. So my question is outside of the spawning season, I'm an avid fisherman. Why is it that a giant grizzly bear can stand in the middle of a stream, jump up, and snag a fish by pouncing on it, but I can stand in that water with a spear all day long, and I can't hit one to save my life? And that the bear is 10 times bigger than me. He's about the size of a leopard. Thank
you. I'll tell you why, because a bear truly needs that to survive. If he doesn't have that skill, the bear will not survive. I promise you that now you feel like if it was something to save your life, but if it was something to save your life, you would get good enough with that spear. And I can tell you why I know that, because I've been with indigenous people in the forest. with little spears or little arrows that they make themselves, that I try to shoot it and I look like a blind person shooting in the dark. They shoot it and they hit like tiny little monkeys and stuff. Accuracy is beyond unbelievable. So again, why? Because that's how they survive. So when you have to fine tune these skills to truly survive, not as a, you know, not as a whatever you call a recreational sport, but to survive, if you really trust me, you would get as good with that spear as the bear is with his claws.
The bears just want it more.
They need to survive.
Right, which means they want it more, right? Win or go home.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Have you ever started a sentence with, I've been with indigenous people in the wild? Let's do a video now. Ron, what do you have there that you're doing play-by-play on?
Okay. You ready?
Yep.
Here we go. Play. Oh,
wow.
These are the quellias. This is the most numerous bird on the face of the planet, the quellias. And they make these huge formations in the sky. It looks like kind of like Halloween, like it's coming to get you, like, get out, I'm coming, get out. And you have these birds that come in and make these huge formations in the sky, and it looks like some kind of alien object coming out. It's like the attack. It's like the apocalypse. It's fantastic to watch these birds, these formations they make in the sky. Again, you think about it, there's hundreds of thousands of birds in those formations, and look at the way the formations go. It's like a symphony in the sky of these formations.
How are they able to do that without running into each other, flying into each other?
Incredible coordination. It's the same way. You look at a big school of fish. Watch what happens when, like, a shark goes in a school, and the school parts, and no fish hits another fish. They just part perfectly, and they make these perfect transitions and perfect waves. It's animals, man. That's what's so wonderful about nature. You know, we think we're so good, and then you look at what nature can do, and you think if these animals actually played sports, if they had the ability to hold a football or hold a basketball and cut and fly and run the way these animals do, there'd be no competition. We'd look like a bunch of nothings.
There has to be one wayward bird that is always running into it, like Jerry.
Yes.
My God, Jerry's with this group, and he just flies in everybody. They're just so small that we don't notice.
And they probably don't survive. That's natural selection. If you don't survive, then you know what? You're going to probably die, and you won't pass that gene on, so there won't be any more stupid birds like you that kept on crashing into birds.
I can't decide
if that's natural selection works.
I can't decide if that's beautiful or horrifying. It's like the smoke monster from Lost.
It's both. Thank you, Ron, for being on with us.
All right, guys. Have a great week. Take care.
All right.
Don Lebatard.
If it's 3% on $100 million, that's $300,000. On 120, it's 360.
Stugatz.
3% of 100 million is 3 million, Stugatz.
Oh, my bad.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz on ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. If you missed any of the show, we'll get back to that. That's conversational. Dan, it's time for Straight Talk. It is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless.
A new South Beach session is out now if you want to check it out. The Whistleblower podcast that goes deeper into the NBA game-fixing scandal than I've ever heard a journalist go. The guy who made that Whistleblower podcast is on with us, and if you want the Cliff Notes version, the Whistleblower podcast is very strong by itself. It's told over many episodes, but one of the things that is happening there is that as it relates to Tim Donaghy and the game fixing, this guy spent 8 years reporting the story. He gets closer to the truth than anyone else has. You've heard Mike Ryan talking about Ted Lasso here, very positive show. A lot of people are getting feel good vibes off of that show. Greg Cody, I'm surprised to hear Greg Cody, who doesn't watch very much television, get caught up in. I'm stunned that you have Apple TV Plus. I'm genuinely stunned. Do you watch anything else on Apple TV Plus or just Ted Lasso?
Nothing else that I'm aware of. My wife has Apple Plus, and I'm just along for the ride. But that's the one show that just grabs me. I so look for it. I was heartbroken when we had to watch the final episode, knowing I'd have to wait to watch another one.
Same thing happened to Mike Ryan. So we're going to clear out some time here so we have time. We're going to go short this segment so we make room for him. There were a couple of things, though, Stugatz, in the fight game that happened this weekend. One of them, Dana White saying now, about 5 years too late, about 5 years out of squeezing every penny out of Anderson Silva, now he shouldn't fight anymore. I mean, Now he shouldn't. You've squeezed every penny. Nobody will pay anymore to watch him fight anymore.
He should never fight again.
It's a shell of Anderson Silva and has been for 5 years. But also, and I don't know how recent this was, it's something I had never seen before, Stugatz, during a stare down in boxing as both sides got very, you know, they looked visually upset right in each other's faces, and one of the boxers just kissed the other one right on the lips, like grabbed the side of his head and kissed him passionately on the mouth. Oh. I've never seen that before, and it was amazing. It was just
what was the reaction of the other boxer?
It was so startling. I mean, to be startled, I would say
would have been really something if he was into it too, and it just becomes a torrid romance and romantic music plays.
One of
the guys nearby
they live happily ever after.
One of the guys nearby started shouting right after the kiss, "I'll see you tomorrow," and I didn't know whether it was like a date or a threat. Like honestly, he just started shouting at the guy who had done the kissing, "We'll see you tomorrow." And it sounded
at Dorsey, a table for two.
Aggressively passionate.
That is Straight Talk. It is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise.
Dan Le Batard.
I failed.
Stugatz.
Thanks for trying.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show on ESPN Radio.
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. The Dan Le Batard Show is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union, proud to serve members of the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Our members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
So Bill Lawrence is responsible for Ted Lasso, the television show on ESPN Television Plus we've been telling you about. He's also responsible for Scrubs, and he's the co-creator of Cougar Town as well. We will get back to Christine Lisi a segment from now so that we can make the room here for Bill Lawrence. We love talking to the creative types around here. Roy is a giant fan of Scrubs. But if I misspoke there, the first season of Ted Lasso is available now on Apple TV Plus. The show's been renewed for seasons 2 and 3. Thank you for joining us, Bill Lawrence. Are you surprised by the reaction to Ted Lasso, or did you know while you're doing it, no, this is going to be good and people are going to embrace it? Thank you for joining us, by the way.
No problem, man. Hey, you got to be a sycophant for a second. I'm a huge fan. So, you know, I mean, time has lost its meaning a little bit, so I don't listen to the show driving to work as much because, you know, I'm in my house, but it couldn't be more fun. Then congrats on your permanent move to ESPN Plus, the complete and total change.
It's not a move.
Well, it's a promotion.
It's not a move. It's not a promotion. We're just available there. Corporately, they're telling us it's not a move, a switch. It's not a shift. It's not anything. It's just we're just going to be there
just
in a
available.
Week. But thank you for congratulating us on something that's not worthy of congratulations.
Look, you're nice enough to ask me a question, but I got to say, can I tell you randomly what hooked me on the show really quick? And it's just because I'm overexcited that Greg Cody's there. And when I went to college, I went to William & Mary, and which is, you know, it has weird colonial people churning butter and stuff and historical. I don't know if you guys know Colonial Williamsburg. It has that kind of historical bent of actors all pretending to live in olden times. And because of that, there are horses all over, drawn carriages and stuff. And a game we used to play, you know, my buddies and me, where if you were walking on a street and you saw, you know, a pile of horse manure up ahead and your friend didn't see it, you would immediately engage him and try to distract him so that he walked directly into it. And, you know, you'd literally go like, "Hey, what's going on in your life? How's it going with your girlfriend?" And that reminded me so much of what you do to Greg on The Hard Out that I've had the giggles about it ever since I first heard it.
Well, so Greg, you must be delighted by this as a fan of Ted Lasso. He was just telling us that he just stared at his television sad with his wife when it ended because he doesn't want to wait for another season, which, of course, by the end of this conversation, he will have asked you to send him season 2 and 3, whether you're finished with them or not.
Right, that's right. Well, I'm already rewriting my resume to include that the great Bill Lawrence has likened me and the Hard Network out to a pile of horse manure. So that's a real highlight for me.
All right, enough love fest. Answer some questions around here. What were you expecting from Ted Lasso when you started to make it?
Look, the if anybody knew what was going to work out here, they'd just do it all the time. So, you know, I used to want to call my company Noble Failure Productions, and so just try to make stuff that I wouldn't be embarrassed if my friends and family watched it. And look, I'd be remiss if I didn't say Ted Lasso. I'm not the main guy. It's me and Jason Sudeikis. It's his vision more than anybody's in the world. He's a writer and a star of it. And Joe Kelly, Brendan Hunt, the four of us created it together. But no, I had no idea. You know, the only thing that we knew was the pandemic hadn't started, but we knew conversationally that the world had reached such a cynical place, you know, in discourse and social media and out there, that it might be interesting to have a hopeful and optimistic character. You know, the type of guy that if I were to meet him in real life, I would assume that the mask would come off in a week or two and he'd reveal himself to be a jerk. And then when he doesn't, you have to look at yourself a little bit, you know?
Is there a model for that? Like, I don't know that a relentlessly upbeat character, are you taking from anywhere there? Do you have a precedent?
Yeah, the only precedent we got is, you know, we're trying to hold on to this optimistic spirit, and Jason and I are both huge sports guys, and we think that most men and women, they had some seminal figure in their life, be it a coach or a teacher or even a family friend, that didn't necessarily white knight them, you know, and make them go down a different path, but at least showed them the way. And we were kind of both really big into that prototype. You know, for me, I was not much of a book smarts guy in high school, and there was a writing teacher that was the first guy that said, hey, you might be able to do something with this, and instead of sneaking out of school twice a day to drink beers across the street at a place called Peach Lake in Connecticut, why don't you come and talk to me about writing? And that guy's name was, his name was Bob Cox. I named this character Dr. Cox and Scrubs after him. And Jason, it was his basketball coach. So for us, even if it's nostalgic memories, we're trying to kind of embody, you know, that coach or teacher that convinced us that there's maybe a different path to go down.
In watching the show, it seems like it's kind of a bit of an undertaking. I don't know what the budget was for that, but were there licensing issues that you run up against when you're trying to get Premier League teams involved?
Oh, yeah, man, it was horrible. It was, you know, anybody, you guys know more than anybody, everybody's so protective of their leagues and their brand. And you know, the interesting thing for us is the kind of the lack of interest, you know, maybe the first year when they didn't know what we were going to do and we're probably worried that we were going to poke fun, has changed to, you know, much bigger opportunities and easier sledding this year. But that's just how, I think that's how all pro sports go. They're so protective of their brands.
Roy is a giant fan of Scrubs. What do you have for Bill Lawrence, Roy?
Yeah, I'm finally happy that we got you on here. I've been thinking about getting you on the show for like 5, 6, 7, 8 times. So, you know, like,
it's dominated your life, Roy. I mean, you're obsessed with it.
With Scrubs, can you tell us more about the inspiration of the show? And you started the show based on a doctor friend that you knew. Can you tell us more about him?
Yeah, man. Look, the very same dude I played the horse manure game with, his name's JD. He was my best pal in college, and he, you know, was not a good student, neither was I. And when he decided to be a doctor, he actually had to go back to med school, which he's not going to be psyched to hear this. He had to go back to undergraduate college again and do, like, pre-med yet again to get into a good med school. And I used to joke with him that my biggest nightmare, even though I love him to death, would be to wake up in an emergency room and see him standing over me saying, hey, it's going to be fine. I would immediately have a panic attack. And all these shows about doctors here were always with people screaming the word stat and kicking doors open and being hyper serious. And, you know, I found that the doctors that I knew to be funny and ridiculous and insecure. And so I just essentially stole his life. You know, he was the medical advisor on the show. So he had that as a second gig to pay off his med school loans. And he's out here now running he runs one of the Kaiser hospitals in Los Feliz, and he runs a whole COVID command center and stuff. So, you know, he was cool enough to give us his and his friends' stories, as long as the one rule was he had to make it clear, even if we were being goofy, that these guys and women always cared about what they were doing and cared about the patients.
Is there a question about Scrubs that you get most often, fans of the show?
Yeah, you know what, the big one always seems to be the guy that played the janitor, Neil Flynn, and I think he's actually made an appearance on your show before, you know, or at least
it's
in the shadows.
Yeah. Or maybe not. My bad. I'm as lazy as they come, as all kind of comedy writers secretly are. And Neil is such a funny improv guy. He's the janitor on Scrubs and the star of a show called The Middle. That, you know, being a comedy writer is like having a term paper due every Monday just for your whole life. And to cut corners in the scripts, we would often, when the janitor's lines, instead of writing them, I'd just write, "Hey, Neil, say something funny," and and then hope for the best. And then the B side of that was always when people liked that joke and came up to me and said, "Oh, I loved it when the janitor said this," I'd go, "Thank you," even though I had nothing to do with it. So it's generally asking about how much he made up himself.
Greg, what do you have for Bill Lawrence, creator or co-creator of Ted Lasso, available now on Apple TV Plus? Show has been renewed for seasons 2 and 3. What do you have for him, Greg?
Bill, you could have put the Ted Lasso character in any occupation, in any context. Why did you choose British soccer?
There's two reasons. One, look, Jason and I wanted to do our version of a sports movie, you know, and my favorite thing is when critics or other people argue that sports movies are about the sport. They're not. I mean, there's one that I think I remember about figure skating with D.B. Sweeney in it. I can never remember the title. You guys remember that movie? It was he was like a hockey player that turned into a figure skater.
I'll look it up right now.
Okay.
Look it up.
The audience will help us.
Yeah, but the point is that it's never about the sports. Bull Durham's not about baseball. I'm not a big boxing guy. I saw every Rocky movie when they came out. And so we just wanted to do a sports movie. We didn't really care about the environment. And Jason, you can see this, Greg, if you wanted to, he had made years ago to promote the Premier League, he had made a couple promotional videos as this character Ted Lasso that he invented. And it was more of a sketch. It was just about an idiot American college football coach that went to coach a Premier League team and didn't understand anything about the game. And that's how this kind of project came to be, is he came to me and he's like, "Hey, do you think we could turn this into an actual TV show and make this guy more kind of human and add some emotions and pathos and stuff?" But not one of us on that. We had to hire a couple British writers that actually know and love the game, because not one of us is a soccer aficionado, you know. And over there, it's like they're college football, man. They're so passionate and it's so regionally based. It's crazy.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay, yep. You'll come on.
I got plane crash questions.
We got to ask about your plane crash. Cutting Edge is the movie you were thinking of.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm glad to.
Sure. Right.
Yeah.
Great. Right. Awesome. Right. Have a good day, man.
No one ever really says yeah.
Right. Easy.
Well, that's not true.
All I want to do is say zoom, zoom, zoom.
No one ever means
boom,
it.
Boom, boom.
No one ever says yeah and means it.
That was weird. It's like happy to be here.
Don Lebatard.
I'm anti-forgiveness.
Stugatz.
Leave my brain alone.
This is the Don Lebatard Show on ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Time to see who got it done. Brought to you by Grainger. The finalists for the BBWAA Awards have been announced. However, since I don't want to read every single candidate because it'll take 5 minutes, let's just focus on the Cy Young and MVP Awards. For the Cy Young Award in the American League, Shane Bieber, Kenta Maeda, and I see why you chose this one, Roy, and Hyun Jin Ryu, how about that, has a chance to win. In the National League, Trevor Bauer, Yu Darvish, and Jacob deGrom are candidates. Up for the MVP award in the American League, Jose Abreu, DJ LeMahieu, and Jose Ramirez. In the National League, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and Manny Machado has a chance to win. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger is always there to help. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop by.
Greg Cody suggested earlier in the show that Justin Turner should be tarred and feathered. I need to get more information. Please, anyone who's got it, on why we were feathering people after tarring them. Many of you have written in, well, it helps kill them. Well, I don't think the feathers have anything to do with the killing.
Well, you want to make sure that the tar stuck and took hold correctly, and the only way you could know that was by sticking feathers on the tar to see if the feathers stuck.
That sounds reasonable to me.
Thank you.
Not the actual tar sticking to someone's skin.
Right. But to see if the tar was hot enough, if it was sticky enough, if it took hold correctly, you have to put feathers on there.
I just don't believe it.
All right. Well, let's see if we have more information. Christine, I'm sorry, Christine Lisi, that we interrupted you.
And finally, it would cost about $1,500 to make a sandwich entirely from scratch, including growing the vegetables, killing the chickens, and making the bread. How about that?
$1,500?
Yeah. Oh. Labor, all the time.
That is stunning. I'm
getting a bargain at my deli. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
South Beach prices.
So, Cody, do you want to, first of all, do you regret tarred and feathered? Because that seems extreme for a lot of different reasons, not the least of which is tarring and feathering in general seems extreme.
It's a little extreme. It's in the same category as when they had stocks in the public square where you'd have to put your head and your two arms through a hole.
Right.
And it's just the whole idea is to publicly humiliate someone for something they've done. I don't think it's a, you know, it's not a punishment intended to kill as far as I know. But
wait a minute. You think being covered in hot tar is not meant to kill?
I like to think of it as warm tar.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, like,
yeah, you
like
know a, what I'm
like
talking
a,
about.
Like a nice bath, just to have some shame and some stickiness in your life and some feathers,
right,
but not some death.
Exactly. And imagine how tough it must be to then remove that tar from your body. What do you use to remove tar? I really had no clue.
And the sneezing involved. I think that's the other thing with the tar. They would tar your body. You couldn't move your arm. You couldn't do anything. And then the feathers
the
and you're sneezing and you're
the
tickling.
Sneezing
yeah.
involved oh, yeah. and
yeah.
tickling. What do you yeah. mean?
And
yeah.
coughing. Yeah. Imagine me, yeah. tarred and feathered.
Cody.
Wow.
Why'd you do that to Justin Turner, man?
I mean, he deserved it. You know that.
Hope you enjoyed the Don Levitard
hey,
Show on ESPN Radio.
I made it.
World star.